Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today, as always, by my gay husband, Miko Alon.
Happy National Coming Out Day.
Yay! Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. We have a fabulous show in store for you today. We're going to open up the show, as always, talking about politics and current events, and then we'll be moving on to the new vegan product segment. This week, we are tasting new avocado-based ice cream by Cotto. And after that, we'll be closing out the show with vegan animal rights news. Now, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone, if you would like to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do so on Twitter. I am at Vegan Ari. Miko is at Miko Alon, or use our hashtag Vegan Ari Show. And remember, if you like our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on Apple or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcasts. And just one more thing, if you wouldn't mind helping us spread the word about the podcast, we are always trying to get more listeners and subscribers. So whatever you can do, if you got a Facebook post that you want to do for about the show, or a tweet that you can put out, or retweet one of us, or I don't know, you want to take out a billboard in Times Square, or you want to buy one of those skywriting planes to write a message over the beach, whatever you can do, no matter how big or how small, all of it is appreciated. And thank you to everyone who has already helped us in that effort. We really, really do appreciate it. So thank you. All right, Miko, there is a lot of ground to cover. So now that we have done the intro, let's get into it. I think we should start out by talking about the vice presidential debate that happened this week. First of all, what did you think of it? What were your overall impressions? How do you think Kamala did?
Oh my God, I think she knocked it out of the park and dominated the debate. I had my frustrations, of course, with the moderator and with Mike Pence, who a lot of people were making comparisons to Norman Bates afterwards because of the fly that landed on Pence's head and the final
that fucking
scene.
Fly. It's all anybody can talk about. It's ridiculous.
But there was something I just felt like about Mike Pence that was so pathetic and robotic, where he was just repeating these lie-filled talking points. He refused to answer, I believe, every single question that the moderator asked, but then kept interrupting Kamala Harris, kept talking over the moderator, kept going past his time. And I just, that to me was very frustrating.
Well,
what did you think?
Well, I think Kamala did a good job. I really did. I mean, she's great in those situations. Kamala, I feel like, is a very strong debater. We've seen her now interrogate people as being part of, I think she's on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Is that why she is always interrogating people like Bill Barr and whatever? Maybe it's just because she's on the Senate. So I think that she does really well in those situations. What bothered me, I think my main takeaway from this debate was afterwards, I was watching, all of the political commentators, talk about how they thought everything went. And I saw several commentators saying things like, well, Kamala Harris has to really walk a tightrope, because if she goes too hard on Pence, if she's too strong, she's just going to be seen as an angry black woman, and that's not going to play well with voters. And people say, they were just saying that, and it was like everyone there was just accepting that, like, that's just the way it is. Like,
that there's two sets of rules.
That, like, she'll just be an angry black woman. No one on these panels of political commentators were even questioning the misogyny and the racism that's so inherent in a comment like that. And so, yes, I think that the fact that she is held to a different standard than Mike Pence because she's a black woman and he's a white man is unacceptable. And I think that the conversation shouldn't be, oh, Kamala really has to walk a tightrope. The conversation should be, why are we accepting that in our culture? Why aren't we challenging that? Why isn't anybody holding him to the same, standards as her with regards to accountability? I mean, he interrupted her so many times. It's you can't even count how many times. I feel like the moderator did not do her job in holding him into account and basically telling him, yo, shut the fuck up already and let her speak. I mean, Kamala had to several times be like, I'm speaking. Please let me speak. You know, and so to me, I just think that was my main takeaway from it, is I just felt like we were watching this misogyny and racism play out in real time. And then afterwards, no one really, you know, who these talking heads that we see all the time on CNN or MSNBC or even Fox. I mean, not that I would expect it from that shithole channel, but nobody really challenging it or questioning it. And that to me is really upsetting. And I just think it's disgusting.
Well, I feel like Kamala Harris had to both answer questions and frankly run the debate. I think that Susan Page, the moderator, was an absolute disgrace. Like, people were trying to congratulate her afterwards and say, she asked so many tough questions. Yeah, she did ask tough questions. However, she did not insist on any answers.
Right.
Mike Pence did not answer a single one of the tough questions. And what was really appalling is that he kept going over and over on his time, and she kept sort of meekly saying, Mr. Vice President, Mr. Vice President. Is this perhaps because we found out this week that Susan Page hosted a fundraiser for one of Mike Pence's best-known protégés who now works at the Trump administration? I'm just saying, Republicans have demanded that when, you know, journalists who have engaged with people very loosely tied to the White House on Twitter should disqualify themselves from debates. Here she is hosting a fundraiser for a Pence acolyte who's at the White House. Is that why she was so deferential to this lying piece of shit?
I mean, this is the thing, is that a lot of people have pointed out that Pence did exactly what Trump did in the first presidential debate, except Pence does it a little bit more nicely. Trump is brash and he's bullying and he yells and screams. You know, Pence is more reserved. So people are willing to accept Pence's, you know, talking over her or wherever, because he does it in a way that's more gentlemanlike. But let's just be real. It's the same bullshit. He's repeating the same lies. He's not answering questions and he's interrupting her. And she is expected to be on, I don't know. Kamala Harris is held to a totally different standard just because she's black and a woman. And so I feel like I feel like that's as a culture and as a society, I feel like that's the shit that I feel like I wish that we were really calling out and just saying how fucked up it is that she's held to a different standard than him. If we lived, you know, in a world where everything was equal, that would not be the case.
Yeah, and why, if we're having a presidential debate and you are asked a question, can't we have moderators who say, answer the question?
Or have moderators
Mr. Vice
that
President,
say,
you dispute a lot of bullshit and, you know, half-truths and absolute mistruths and misrepresentations, and you didn't even answer the question. You didn't even address the subject of the question. Answer the fucking question.
Or just have moderators that say, shut the fuck up. Shut up. Stop interrupting her. Let her answer. If you don't shut the fuck up, I'm going to turn your fucking mic off. You know what they need? They need the moderator to be from Jersey, because Jersey don't play, okay? And if the moderator was from Jersey, they're going to shut your fucking mic off if you don't shut the fuck up.
And also, what happened to... I remember when we had one of the debates, I want to say it was the second debate between Obama and Mitt Romney. And Mitt Romney made a complete bullshit statement about Benghazi that the moderator corrected him on the air, live on the air, and said, that is untrue. What has happened to that kind of... It's just basic fucking journalism when someone is lying their ass off in a public medium to say, actually, that's not true. There are some things that are actually still objective facts that Mike Pence completely misrepresented. And I do think one of my favorite moments was how the debate opened, because Kamala Harris came out swinging and was like, you people have killed over 200,000 Americans. You've lied. You've minimized. You've mishandled. And Mike Pence went on to some blabbering, like, comment about how, well, Barack Obama and Joe Biden and swine flu, and that was much worse. And it's like, who is buying this administration's desperate bullshit? Like, you can.
I'll tell you who. 40% of the voters in this country. It's absolutely shocking. I mean, at this point, the fact that around 40% of registered voters, at least that's what the polls show, are still supporting him, it's it fills me with despair. That's who's buying that bullshit. But let's move on, because like I said, there's lots of ground to cover. And I want to talk about this horrifying right-wing terrorist plot to kidnap and murder Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. This is really scary shit. So the FBI wound up arresting several men in this plot to kidnap her. And Governor Widmer, I believe the day of the arrests, she held a press conference and she specifically called out President Trump for refusing to denounce hate groups, asking people like the Proud Boys, that is considered a hate group and a violent hate group at that, to, you know, stand by, be at the ready, like he did at the first presidential debate. And then Trump took to Twitter to essentially attack her and say, oh, she's, you know, she's a, I don't know exactly what he said, but he said something like, you know, oh, she's terrible and she should have thanked me. Can we just, I don't know, can we just unpack this for a minute? I mean, what kind of world do we live in when there's a group of men that launch a terrorist plot against a United States governor and everybody just can't agree that that's horrific and should be condemned? And we have really crossed over into some really fucked up territory in this country.
Well, let's first talk about the fact how much that's abnormal here that the Republican Party tries to normalize. First of all, this domestic terrorist cell was referred to in the media, even in Michigan, as a militia. And first of all, let's just first point out that militia activity in itself is illegal in all 50 states. But they're not a militia. They're a terrorist group. And we should use words to accurately describe who want to kidnap and murder sitting public officials.
Oh, Miko. Don't you know, Miko, that when it's a group of white men engaging in terrorist behavior, it's a militia. Anyone else would be a terrorist group, a terrorist organization, but white men, it's a militia. Because in the United States, in the white supremacist culture that we live in, we can't possibly call white men terrorists. They're militia members.
Let's then talk about the fact, as you said, Trump attacks her.
And of course, this that was sarcasm.
Yes, of course. For the first time, I think, in American history, when a public official has been targeted for a murder plot, Donald Trump, the White House official position is not to condemn the plot, it is to attack her.
Right.
And let's remember, we know now that this plot started the very day that Trump tweeted, "Liberate Michigan."
Yes.
Then we see these kinds of stories. I saw this astonishing bullshit piece that was like a picture from one of these toothless inbreds who was a part of this plot. It literally looks like the cast of Deliverance. Like if this was, you know, the... Anyway, there's a picture from the backyard of one of these people that looks like a dumpster and Trump flags and like some dilapidating house. And it was literally like the piece's tone was, let's not talk about, can we talk about how economic depression and whatever contributes to people becoming radicalized? Let's stop making excuses for racist white men, for lunatics, for right-wing gun fetishists and lunatics who are being incited by America's number one radicalizer of domestic terrorists, Donald Trump. And let's not pretend this is the first time, right? Let's go back in time for a little bit. We have Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, incited by Trump when he's talking about anarchists and looters. We have the El Paso mass murdering gunman. And then we have the guy who sent pipe bombs to CNN after Trump was talking about the media as the enemy of the people. He is constantly radicalizing people and pushing people into violence. And the Republican Party is silent and acquiescing and equally guilty.
It's really a scary time if we all can't agree that terrorism should be unequivocally denounced.
And instead we saw in this
case,
we saw Republican politicians attack the governor.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like
the survivor of this plot.
Or you see, you know, people defending Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, it's just, it's disgraceful. It's despicable. So I really want to applaud Gretchen Whitmer, because I think that it took a lot of courage to speak out and to call this what it is and to say, look, like, this is the fucking world we're going to live in when we have a president who is inciting, you know, hate and who is refusing to condemn hate groups. I applaud her for that.
And remember when
gun-toting,
you know, patriot cosplayers stormed the Capitol with weapons, which in itself is an act of terrorism.
Well, this
and the governor was put to a safe room.
Yeah.
What did Trump say?
That
at the
was
time?
In Michigan.
What did Trump say at the time? Can we guess? He didn't say, "Do not do things like that. I condemn." No, he called them very fine people, great people.
Right. It's, yeah.
Disgusting.
All right. Well, let's talk about the pandemic. Because when we did the show last week, it was just a day or so after Trump had tested positive for the coronavirus. He's now obviously back at the White House. Looks like he has recovered or is recovering. I mean, he's going to be back on the campaign trail this week. But there was some really, you know, fucked up shit that came out this week regarding the pandemic. I think the first thing that I want to talk about is that the CDC at some point was going to mandate mask wearing on public transportation. And we learned that the White House shut that down. Now, I have to say, when you have the head of the CDC saying that masks are the most effective thing that we can do to protect against transmission of the virus, up to 70% effective, why? Why would the White House shut this down? I have a theory. I think that, you know, Trump now has this guy, Scott Atlas, as part of his coronavirus task force, and this guy is pushing herd immunity. I think that they're just like fucking gonna go full herd immunity. I honestly do. And I also think that, like, let's be real, when you're talking about public transportation, you're talking about lower income people. I don't think Trump gives a shit.
It's not just public transportation. It was also planes. I think that it goes back to what we've been talking about before in the show, that Trump actively discourages people from wearing masks. He doesn't want to wear the mask in public himself because it's a daily reminder for people how upside down our world is as a result of this administration's completely failed response. But we've seen this pattern from the very beginning, that every effort to try to actually take effective measures to curb the transmission of this virus, they opposed and shut down. Remember when the U.S. Postal Service was going to send 5 masks to every American
household? Yeah, and they shut that down too.
Yeah. So it's obscene. And then to listen to this administration constantly talk about as if they've done something amazing. Like the new upside down talking point is, well, we didn't kill 2 million people. We've only killed 210,000 Americans to date. I mean, the number could be as high as 400,000. We know that the cases are going up again. It's now about 55,000 Americans infected every day. And they pretend the virus doesn't even exist anymore.
This is the thing. With all of Trump's disgusting rhetoric with, you know, I mean, there's been so many things during this administration that has just been absolutely appalling. I mean, separating children from parents at our border, putting kids in cages. I mean, there's been so much. But I do think that Trump's response to the coronavirus pandemic is the biggest indictment of his presidency. Just to quickly recap, no national plan at all, no testing strategy at all, no contact tracing strategy at all, no national mask mandate at all, no national strategy to make sure that PPE was properly distributed to hospitals. Unequivocally, the worst response in the world, with over 200,000 dead people from the virus, and with the United States having only 5% of the world's population, we also have more than 20% of the infections in the world. I mean, this has been an unmitigated disaster. And so I think, like, look, you know, I talk to people in my family who are Trump supporters. I know. And one person in particular likes to tell me, well, no one could have seen this coming. It's something that happens only every 100 years. Like, whatever. All these, you know what, though? Every president faces challenges, okay? Every president. And either you rise to the challenge or you fucking fail. And this was an absolute failure of leadership, of strategy, of everything. And we're still suffering for it. Trump, in one of these weird videos that he put out this week, says, oh, don't be afraid of the virus. This is what he says in these videos. This is a fucking man who's getting treatment, special treatment that no one else will get. He has a team of a dozen doctors that no one else will have. And then at that Nazi rally that he held at the White House yesterday, he tells everybody that the virus is disappearing. It's not disappearing. It's quite the opposite. You have so many epidemiologists saying right now that we are at the beginning of the second wave. As you said, we are now averaging over 50,000 new cases a day. This has been an absolute disaster, and we are all being affected by it. And when, I mean, when he comes out on, you know, on a video and says, don't be afraid of COVID, I mean, how is that supposed to make the hundreds of thousands of families feel who are in mourning right now over their lost loved ones? I mean, the man has got no compassion. He's got no empathy. All he thinks about is himself. Oh, well, he survived it, so no one should be afraid of it. Yeah, well, not everybody gets fucking airlifted in Marine One to Walter Reed and then gets a team of doctors, you know, looking over them every 5 minutes. I mean, this is just, I don't even know what to say anymore. If America can look at this, at this disaster, and still vote for this man, does anything matter anymore?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? I mean, I would like to ask, does anything matter anymore to Amy Coney Barrett? We now know that Trump was infected at this Rose Garden party that he held to basically announce her nomination. And we learned this week that this treatment that Trump got is made from aborted tissue. And to me, it's like the one thing you hear from the religious right all the time, from evangelicals who support Trump, is that the number one issue, which is why they have to support Trump, is abortion. And here he is saying he wants to make this treatment available to all Americans for free. So abortion tissue is okay when Trump pushes it, but not to Amy Coney Barrett, who, by her own admission, is a part of a fringe in the anti-abortion movement where her views are extreme, even within the anti-abortion movement, where she's against in vitro fertilization, she's against contraceptives. It's like, as we have said many times before on the show, the absolute laughable hypocrisy and moral bankruptcy of the religious right that has stood behind this serial sexual predator who embodies the seven deadly sins and seven other deadly sins that aren't even on the list. It's just breathtaking.
I mean, it's true. It really does, again, highlight the complete hypocrisy of the religious right. And you know, when the story broke that this cocktail that he took, this antibody cocktail made by Regeneron, was developed using aborted tissue, I knew that we weren't going to hear anything from the religious right. I knew that we were going to hear complete silence. And, you know, again, it's like, you know, I got to bring up, Pete Buttigieg was on Fox News, and you'll understand why I'm bringing this up in a minute. If you haven't caught Pete Buttigieg on Fox News, you really need to. He's been incredible. I can't believe they're even having him on. And right before the VP debate, one of the, I don't want to call them journalists, the hosts on Fox News said to him, you know, what do you think Kamala is going to do? It seems like she's changed her position on a number of things, and I think that's going to be a focus of the debate. What do you think she's going to do? And he said, well, he said, you know, a lot of people seem to change their position. You have Mike Pence, who's been this rabid, you know, evangelical, who is running with a man who was caught with a porn star. So why doesn't someone ask him about the hypocrisy of that? And I think that, you know, it's the same way you have Trump out there, like you said, saying, I'm going to make this drug free to anybody who wants it in America. The drug was developed using aborted tissue. And these people are, that has been their number one issue. And again, it's like silence, crickets. It's just, again, it points out how this is not about that. This is about something else. I think it's about racism, quite frankly. I think that is the only reason why anyone could support Trump at this point. I mean, the man refuses to condemn white supremacy. He's an open racist. I think, do you really, I mean, honestly, people that call themselves pro-life, are you really pro-life when children are being thrown in cages? You know, are you really pro-life when this administration's failed policies resulted in over 200,000 Americans dying from a virus? How can you call yourself pro-life? I mean, it's just, it's a joke.
They're laughable and obscene. And they always have been.
Always have been. Yeah, exactly. All right, Miko. Well, with that, I think we've covered everything we want to cover. What do you say we lighten the mood and taste some new vegan products?
Let's do it.
All right. Yay, new vegan products. Okay, so today we are tasting brand new vegan ice cream. This time, it's ice cream made from avocados. The brand is called Cado, and we have two flavors to try. We have a deep, dark chocolate and a mint chocolate chip. I am not a fan of mint chocolate anything.
Speak for yourself.
So that is unfortunate. But these were the only two flavors that I could find, and I wanted to taste them because we actually talked about this stuff, I think, in the new vegan product segment not too long ago. So when I saw it, I grabbed it. Okay. So, Miko, since mint and chocolate chip is not my favorite, why don't we start with the deep dark chocolate and we'll take it from there.
Okay.
All right, here we go. I'm getting a nice big spoonful.
Mmm.
Mmm. Oh. 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 Oh, my. Oh.
Okay. Would you like a moment alone?
That is really good. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Let me see what this says. All right. So the main ingredient is avocado puree. There's no nuts in here. There's no... Okay. I have to say something. This ice cream is like buttery. It's like buttery smooth. That is fucking good as hell. I was like seriously having an out-of-body experience.
You know, I will say I find that really amazing. That there's no nuts because it's so creamy and fluffy, and really the texture is so reminiscent of just regular ice cream.
The texture is so creamy and smooth, and that's the only way I can describe it. There's a buttery flavor to this that is so fucking good. And it's I would say it says deep dark chocolate. I don't know if I would call this dark chocolate. I think that this definitely has more of a creamy chocolate flavor to it. It's really, really good. That's great. Anything you want to add?
No, it's delicious. I want to try the next
one. Wow. Oh, my God. That's one of the best vegan ice creams I've ever tried. Oh, my God. All right. Now, let's try the mint chocolate chip. All right, girl. Here we go.
Mmm.
I mean,
very minty.
All right. I gotta be honest. Okay. All right. The texture is great. This has also that buttery quality to it. I am not a mint chocolate chip person. I do not like chocolate to be corrupted by certain flavors. I think that when you add raspberry or strawberry or mint to chocolate, I have no tolerance for it. Chocolate should only be mixed with things like peanut butter and caramel and that sort of thing. I don't like this type of mixture. But it's good. I mean, if you like mint chocolate chip, you're going to like it. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm Miku Alan, and I don't approve of that message. Chocolate should always be mixed with fruit. Orange is a great accompaniment to
it ruins
raspberry.
It. Orange and chocolate is the worst. I know.
So, listeners, make your own judgments. I will say this. Is this the best mint chocolate chip ice cream flavor I've had? No, I think it's fine.
Okay.
It's a little... No, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to say it. It's a little vaguely toothpaste-y mint.
Ooh. Ew.
Like, that's why...
I'm telling you, mint chocolate chip ice cream is bullshit. It's just bullshit. It's like, just you shouldn't do that.
Something... It's missing something. It's a little... Yeah. Off.
Now, all right. I will say this. There's no avocado flavor whatsoever to either of these ice cream.
That is true.
I don't taste avocado. I taste ice cream. This is remarkable. I really, even though, you know, I wasn't a fan of the mint chocolate chip because it's Dutch, I'm just not. I still think that this is excellent in terms of a base for ice cream. Again, it's soy free, it's nut free, it's gluten free. Basically anyone who has avocados can have this. So if you have any allergy issues, and I would love to see them really expand this line. I don't know how many flavors they have in the line. I only saw these two. I would love to see them do a bunch of flavors with this because honestly, I think this is really unique and special. This is some of the creamiest vegan ice cream I've ever had. And that buttery flavor, girl, I'm feeling it. That is delicious. So I give the chocolate an A+. The mint chocolate chip, I'm going to take a pass on that. I'm not even going to give it a fucking grade because that's just not my thing. But definitely the chocolate is an A+.
Yeah, I think chocolate A+, mint, okay.
All right. Well, there you have it. Our review of Cado avocado-based vegan ice cream. Look for it in the frozen section of your supermarket. And with that, Miko, let's do some vegan animal rights news.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, everybody, it is time for vegan animal rights news. First story. Tofurky is suing Louisiana for their anti-vegan labeling law.
Good.
Now, this, we've seen this now in several states, this is happening, where vegan companies are challenging these new laws that target vegan companies. And in Louisiana, the law, which was signed by Governor John Bel Edwards, it says that products that are plant-based or even cell-based, so like, you know, the clean meat stuff that hasn't come to market yet, they are forbidden from using terminology such as meat and beef. And if you use those words on your packaging, you can be fined $500 a day. I mean, this is just so stupid. Again, we've been through this, but words like meat have been used to describe plant-based foods for years. I mean, think about the meat of a melon, you know,
or coconut.
Coconut meat. Same thing with the word milk. You know, you have coconut milk. Like, I don't understand. Same thing with the word butter. I mean, shea butter. Shea is a plant. Like, this is just, I can't imagine how this would be held up by the courts. I think that these laws are ridiculous. Now, we talked about a couple weeks ago that Upton Naturals is fighting this, I think in Oklahoma. There's another state. But again, this is going on in Wisconsin. This is going on in Missouri. This is going on all over the country right now. And I think it's because the meat and dairy and egg industries are scared. They're scared because the truth is, as these vegan products improve every year, people are trying them and they're liking them. And they know that these products are better for the environment. They're better for your health. They're better for animals. I mean, who wants to eat a fucking stank hamburger when you can have an Impossible Burger or a Beyond Burger? So it's pathetic. And I hope that Tofurky prevails in Louisiana and all the other companies suing. I know Miyoko's is part of she was part of a lawsuit in California because of this. I think she did prevail. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But I think eventually these cases will end up in the Supreme Court. I think that there's going to have to be just like one judgment that like does away with all these stupid laws.
But it's
laws.
So ridiculous because all of these obviously run afoul with the First Amendment. Like, what are we even talking about? All these laws.
Yeah. All right. Next story. The animal rights group Animal Outlook, formerly known as COK, has released a really awful undercover investigation from a dairy farm in California. This farm is called Dick Van Dam Dairy. The fuck kind of name is that? Okay. And they supply dairy to Dean Foods, and the dairy that they supply to Dean Foods is also somehow distributed through our school lunch program. This undercover investigation, I'm just going to give you some of the highlights. It showed workers hitting cows in the face, legs, and udders with splintered wooden sticks and metal pipes, kicking cows in the face, twisting their tails so hard that their bones broke. This is the kind of shit that's going on America's dairy factory farms. This is disgusting and despicable, and it is absolutely appalling to think that the products of this abuse and exploitation then end up in the school lunch program. It's fucking appalling.
And of course, this is what undercover investigators find every time they go under. There's always abuse of the animals. You can't treat living beings as machines or commodities or just a means to an end and expect it to be humane.
The thing is, too, I think that there's fewer and fewer groups doing undercover work. Like, Animal Outlook is, I think, one of the last ones to do it. I mean, everybody knows I used to work at an animal rights organization that was known for doing undercover work. I don't even know if they do undercover work anymore, to be honest. And I think it's sad because the undercover investigations are really the only window that we have into factory farms. You can't knock on the door of a factory farm and be like, oh, can I have a tour? No, they're not going to give you a tour. So I think that these are very important. I think that these really do a lot to, you know, move the ball forward. But also, I think that in terms of education, public education, I think these are invaluable. So very sad that this was uncovered. Hopefully it'll change some things. Okay, next story. Nearly 10,000 minks are dead from a COVID-19 outbreak at a fur farm in Utah.
Ugh.
Now, these animals caught COVID, obviously from humans who had it, who worked there. I have some questions here. Number one, the fuck? There are fur farms in Utah? I didn't even know that. And mink farms at that? And then, like, you know that you have employees that are positive for COVID that are working with the animals. We already know from what happened in Europe that minks are vulnerable to this. This is just, it's such a heartbreaking story all the way around. And my heart breaks for these animals, first of all, to have to live their lives in such hideous conditions in these cages on these fucking fur farms, and then to die, you know, of COVID-19. I mean, they would have a horrific death either way, but this is just sad. I mean, I have a story later that I'll do about another country that's banning not only fur farming, but the sale of fur throughout the country. The United States should be on board with this. I know that the United States really lags behind Europe and other nations in the world when it comes to, you know, animal welfare. We need to get on board. There shouldn't be a fucking fur farm anywhere in the United States. This is an absolute disgrace. Okay, next story. Speaking of disgraces, two police officers in Maine were fired from the police department when a video turned up of them beating porcupines to death with their batons.
What the fuck?
Can you believe this? So yeah, these two police officers had another police officer, there was a third one involved, who actually recorded them beating these poor animals to death. What the fuck is wrong with people?
Hold on. So if a civilian did that, they'd be charged with animal cruelty. What are these cops charged with? Nothing? You just get fired?
I don't see anywhere in here that, well, wait a minute. It says, yes, they have been charged with misdemeanor aggravated cruelty to animals.
How the fuck is aggravated cruelty to animals a misdemeanor?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you can defend this at all. I mean, at least they got fucking fired. But, you know, honestly, this is just a disgrace. I mean, this was national news. This was on CNN. Okay, next story. There was an article in the BBC that I thought was interesting. This is about a new trend that has started in the Netherlands, where people travel to farms to hug cows. And cow hugging has become this like new like therapeutic thing. They say like if you snuggle with a cow, it can lower your blood pressure and improve your stress level. And, you know, they say a cow's body has warmer temperature. It has a slower heartbeat. It says that hugging them is an extremely soothing practice. In Dutch, it's called co-knuffelen. That's cow hugging in Dutch. My question, though, about this article is it says that these cows are on a farm, not a sanctuary. So my question is, please don't fucking tell me that these people have a business where they allow people to come to their farm and hug their cows and these beautiful, gentle animals, and then they turn around and fucking slaughter them for beef or exploit them for dairy. I really hope that that is not what happens to these animals that are like essentially therapy animals. That would be horrific to ponder, but it doesn't really say. So I tagged them on Twitter. I tweeted the article and I said, can you, you know, maybe follow up with this? Because I do think that people just take for granted, oh, these cows are just here. Yeah, well, what happens to the cows? Do they get to live out their lives in peace on these farms? Or are they eventually, you know, brutally slaughtered so that you can eat hamburger? I would like to know. But yeah, I mean, I think hugging cows is beautiful. You know, cows are, I mean, we've spent some time with cows on sanctuaries, and they are incredibly gentle, sweet animals. They just kind of like to hang out and eat grass. And I mean, I would do some co-knuffeln. Would you?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite, you know, I gotta be honest. When we go to sanctuaries, and we haven't been in years, but my favorite animals on farm sanctuaries are donkeys.
I knew you were going to say
I love the donkeys. I love the sounds that they make. I think they are so sweet. I think they are so cute. And one time when we went to Farm Sanctuary in Northern California in Orland, that's basically, I spent hours out there with the donkeys, feeding them apples and just hanging out. I was in love with them. They're so sweet. All right. Next story. Elmhurst is in the news. They are going to be launching new pumpkin spice creamers for the fall.
Beautiful.
Now, these pumpkin spice creamers come in three flavors, which I don't know why it's... Oh, anyway, there's a pumpkin spice, which is, I guess... there's an apple pie spice, and there's a gingerbread. Ooh.
Ooh, we should try these.
These sound delicious. They are hemp and oat based. So again, no nuts if you can't do the nuts, no soy. I love Elmhurst. I think that their products are really great, and I would love to try this. I don't know. I think they do sell Elmhurst at our local grocery. So I'm going to try and pick this up so we can try it on the show. But yeah, I would be super excited, especially, I mean, you know, when it comes to pumpkin spice, girl, I'm like the biggest Becky. I mean, I am basic as they come. And no offense to Becky's. I am as basic as they come when it comes to pumpkin spice. As soon as it's September 1st, I want pumpkins everywhere. I want them in the supermarket. I want them in my house. I want pumpkin pie. I want PSLs. I want the whole thing. So I would be super excited to try this. We'll have to look at them, look for them in Gelson's and see if we can find it. Okay, next story. Beyond Meat is launching vegan breakfast sausage links.
Mmm.
I mean, is this really that different than the patties? Because they had the breakfast sausage patties.
No, they're very good.
The flavor's the same, right?
Probably, but you know what? Can't wait.
All right. Well, we'll have to look for this. We did try their breakfast sausage patties, and they're excellent.
Out of this world.
Really, really good. So I'm sure, I mean, honestly, everything Beyond Meat does is A+. So I'm sure these are going to be no different. We'll have to look for these in the supermarket. Okay, next story. A new vegan egg will be launching in the United States. This is called Zero Egg. And I guess this is going to be to compete with Just Egg. Unfortunately, though, it won't be available in retail markets yet. This is only going to be for food service operators and food manufacturers. It said that Zero Egg is made from soy, potato, pea, and chickpeas. Good. All right. I mean, I'm all for more vegan eggs on the market, right?
Yeah, and I think we're tasting one next week.
We are?
Yeah, we have a new vegan egg.
Oh, that's right. We picked up
like a liquid egg.
You want to taste that next week?
Yeah, let's do it next week.
All right. Okay, speaking of vegan eggs, my next story, Just Egg announced that they are doing a revamp of the Just Egg product. This is going to be more egg-like, and it's going to come to Whole Foods by the end of the year.
Wow. I mean, it's very good already.
Just Egg 3.0?
Yeah.
Because they definitely changed it from the
Listeners of the show may remember, when it first became available as a retail product, we tried it. We were not hugely impressed. But the reformulated one that's in stores now is stunning and excellent, and I eat it every week. And so if it's even better than that, well.
And now they're reformulating it again. Mm. How will we know that we're getting the reformulated version, though? Because it doesn't look like they're changing the packaging from what I can tell. You think there'll be like a little thing on it saying like now eggier or some
probably
shit like that?
I mean, I think that the one thing which I would only imagine that they would do is just give it more traditional egg-like flavor, because the flavor is good, but it's not like exactly like eggs. So I think they're probably just adjusting the flavor profile, perhaps.
Do you put any of that black salt on it to give it that eggy flavor?
I don't actually do that. I do mine with garlic powder and oregano.
Okay. You do eat it a lot and you love it.
Yeah.
So. All right. And my last story of the week. Israel is set to ban not only the production of fur, but the sale of fur throughout the entire country.
Bravo.
They would be the first country in the world to ban the sale of fur. Now, there is some loopholes with this. They said that you would still be able to buy fur for scientific research, education, or instruction. I don't know for what. And for religious purposes or tradition. And I think that that's significant to point out because In Orthodox Judaism, they wear that fur hat. It's called the shtreimel. And that is made from fur. Now, I know that there are vegan shtreimels, though. So you don't have to buy like a shtreimel made from animals. You can buy a vegan one, but I don't know how many Orthodox Jews are concerned with a vegan. I mean, I guess some of them are if they're available. But this would obviously be a groundbreaking piece of legislation if it's indeed signed into law, and hopefully would set a precedent for other countries to follow. I mean, a lot of countries have now banned the production of fur, but I don't, you know, I don't think that there's been any discussion about banning the sale of fur in other countries.
Yeah. Doesn't Israel also lead the world in terms of vegan trends in general, in terms of the percentage of population that's vegan?
I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that. I know that at some point there was some sort of survey that was done that said 5% of Israel is vegan. I don't know. I haven't seen anything recently. I know that there's a very strong vegan movement, though, in Israel, particularly in Tel Aviv. And so, yeah, so this is great. I'm sure that a lot of activists worked on this effort. I would love, you know, to see this happen in other countries. Now, there are other cities that have banned the sale of fur. I think that Los Angeles bans the sale of fur. And I think Beverly Hills is going to ban if they haven't already done it. So it's been done on a municipal level. But it would be great to see, you know, countries stand up and say, enough is enough. We're not going to sell this bullshit anymore, you know? Okay. Well, with that, Miko, we have come to the end of another show.
Yes, we have.
I want to thank everyone so much for listening. We love doing the show and we love you guys. Again, if you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do so on Twitter. I am at @VeganAri. Miko is at @MikoAlan, or use our hashtag #VeganAriShow. And remember, if you like our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on Apple or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcasts. And one more thing. Actually, there's two more things. The first one is, if you are a fan of the show and you would help us get more subscribers and listeners by, you know, posting on your social media or, I don't know, retweeting us, that would be appreciated. We are always trying to get more subscribers and listeners to the show. So thank you to everyone who's helped us with that. And finally, my last thing, don't forget to register to vote and to actually vote. So go to vote.com.
.org.
Fuck. I always fuck it up. There's a bunch of websites, though, that you can look. I think iwillvote.com is another one. Make sure that you are registered if the deadline hasn't already expired in your state. You know, make sure you vote early. If you have early voting in your state, make sure you vote by mail. And if you do, send in your ballot as early as you possibly can. And if you vote in person, just make sure to mask up, try and keep a distance, and, you know, make sure that your vote is counted.
And remember, friends don't let friends vote Republican.
What about my family who's voting Republican, who's already voted Republican?
That is a Shonda.
Well, what am I going to do? I tried. All right. If we do not hear from you this week, we will talk to you next weekend. Have a beautiful week, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.